Hi, I'm Bill Maher, senior reporter for The Deal, where I cover the always colorful SPAC sector.
Today on Drinks with a Deal, we welcome Guy Bruden, Managing Director of Investment Banking at Chardon Capital Markets. Chardon is unusual in that it's not only an underwriter or an advisor, it's also been an investor and a sponsor of SPACs. I'm going to have Guy talk about how Chardon has managed all of that. But first, I want him to tell us a little bit about his own background. So Guy, thanks for being here and welcome to the show.
Thanks, Bill. Really great to be here and happy to contribute to the education and care and feeding of the SPAC product, which is really a fantastic platform and much underappreciated and maligned. Glad to be here.
So give us a sense of how your career is laid out and the path that brought you to Chardon.
Sure. Started off years ago at Merrill Lynch as an associate in the investment banking group, went from there to Payne Webber, and then wound up at Dillon Reed for a few years. Then spent really the bulk of my career in corporate development, working inside corporations, MasterCard, Medco Health, doing strategic M&A there. Took a couple of small companies public, and then for the last, 11 years was at a private equity shop family office called Terrapin Partners, where I was part of a team that did three large successful SPACs. Learned the product starting in 2006. And again, those were Great Lakes Dredge and Dock, the largest dredging company in North America, the paper and packaging divisions of Boise Cascade, the third largest white paper manufacturer in the country. And then finally, the largest corporate travel agency in India, Yatra Online. So three hands-on members of that SPAC team. And then for the last 7 years have been at Chardon, generalist banking firm, great 22, 23-year-old investment bank focused on emerging growth technology companies, and has since the earliest days of the SPAC product also been a sponsor and underwriter and advisor to SPACs. So it's been a really interesting run, both inside corporations and advising corporations, and really happy to have joined the team here at Chardon a few years ago. Great bunch of folks.
Okay. Investment banks that we see in this sector, they're underwriters. They can be obviously placement agents, advisors. Certainly, that's something we see a lot of. But Chardon has also chosen to be a sponsor as well, which is not something we see from a lot of investment banks. Cantor Fitzgerald obviously has done a lot of it. But the flip side of that is, I believe Goldman's only done two in their entire history. So that's a little bit different. And when we look at Chardon, according to PrivateRaise, our in-house data service, from 2015 to 2025, a decade there, Chardon participated in 43 SPAC IPOs as an underwriter. And at times they were second, third, and fourth in terms of number of SPAC IPOs that they did. Also, from 2004 until 2025, Chardon sponsored a dozen SPACs, closed eight de-SPACs, and then two were abandoned and two were liquidated. That's a lot of activity. And as I noted, it started in 2004. So Chardon has been in this game a long time. Can you give me a sense of how you guys approach things? Because you're not only sitting with other sponsors in terms of their vehicles, but you've got your own, and then you're doing the traditional underwriting thing, and you have to approach that in terms of a market. So just give me a sense of how you keep all these balls in the air.
Sure. The thing to remember is that Chardon is a full service focused investment bank. We have generalist banking, sales and trading, equity research, and have from the very beginning. So if you think about us, SPACs are really one component of what we do. And what we do is help technology companies, emerging growth companies access capital. That's what we do. SPACs are one way to do that. And it just happens to be a way that the team here has, since the very beginning of this product, been very active. We did the second or third SPAC in this whole new era back in 2004. And as you said, we've been on every part of the SPAC product, from underwriting IPOs for others to sponsoring our own SPACs to co-sponsoring. And I have to point out that from 2004 to 2019, we had no SPAC liquidations. We were the only major underwriter to have that sort of record. So, you know, understated, it's not like we're tooting our own horn on that, but Sartin has really played every role, Bill, and because it's a natural evolution from the beginning where we were approached to sponsor a SPAC and did four in succession in the early 2000s that were very successful, to growing our business, to advising others, not just on the IPO, but we worked very hard all the way through on the de-SPAC, on the target identification acquisition. So for us, it's natural to bring the experience of being a sponsor and knowing how difficult it is to do a SPAC all the way through to advising others from before the IPO till after the merger. And I'll finish by saying that, not to malign or criticize others, but the track record of doing it for 20 years is very, very different from SPACs that are advised or done by folks who sort of came in the 2020-21 period. So I think we do have a very unique, very, very few folks have done all the things we have. I'd say probably none.
Let's back up to something you just said, because I think it's an interesting point to explore a little bit. In the second half of 2020 and 2021, the SPAC IPOs exploded. In 2019, there were 59 SPAC IPOs that raised $12 billion. And at the time, that was thought to be an awful lot of activity. And it was the largest number of SPAC IPOs ever. We got to the second half of 2020 and things exploded. And in 2021 was even more ridiculous with 612 IPOs. Do me a favor and take us through that period as to why suddenly SPACs were the most popular game in town, and suddenly bulge bracket banks and white shoe law firms were rushing in to get deals done.
The word suddenly is really the important word there. So SPACs have a really important but very specific place in the capital markets. They represent an alternative way for a company to go public. They are, simply put, a reverse merger into a shell that's purpose made. It's a clean, specifically constructed shell, publicly traded like every other company on the NASDAQ or the New York Stock Exchange, that is there as a vehicle for a reverse merger. And the structure right now, roughly, has been fairly consistent from 2004 to now, with some tweaks. Over the course of time, you've had some really interesting, well-known retail names. Jamba Juice, when it was a popular chain,
right,
used a SPAC to go public. The Tile Shop, Hostess, the folks who make Twinkies. Over time, the 2006, 2012, 2016, those three names went public. And then what happened? So up until COVID, up until 2019, 2020, SPACs represented about 15% of all IPOs, which makes sense. It's a unique and special tool for companies that want to go public that find it to be an advantage to a regular IPO. What happened in 2019 is the confluence of a bunch of things, right? You had, you know, 15 years of education. People were learning about the product. A lot of evangelical preaching to private equity and emerging growth companies. What are the advantages of a SPAC? Then you had Virgin Galactic do a very successful reverse merger backed by Chamath Palihapitiya into his SPAC. Directly after that, DraftKings and a series of very successful de-SPACs. At the same time, you had, unfortunately, but you had the COVID pandemic with a lot of folks sitting at home who like the capital markets. You had the retail investor beginning to notice these retail-oriented names like Virgin and DraftKings. We could talk about the institutional demand, the fact that there were very low interest rates and very difficult environment for institutional credit funds to find yield. And you had a lot of things come together to fuel this incredible expansion of people rushing in to be SPAC sponsors, And that drew a whole range of advisors, banks and law firms who had virtually no experience with the product. And unfortunately, at that point, the expansion, as you pointed out, going from 59 SPAC IPOs to 250 the following year, did inevitably bring in folks who were unskilled in some of the areas that you really need to do your homework in to execute a good SPAC. And frankly, a lot of companies that were poorly advised to go public in advance of being ready.
So what I'm also wondering about, let me toss a couple numbers out here so we can put things into perspective. From 2010 until 2019, there were a total of 226 IPOs. So it's 22 a year, basically.
Yeah, it's back on IPOs. Yeah,
exactly. Yep. And on average, they raised, the total each year was $4 billion. Not crazy numbers. We go to 2020 and 2021, and there's 946 IPOs, which is insane.
Yeah.
And it raises $305 billion. Again, a pretty big number. But take those 2 years out again. In the following 2023 and 2024, you get a total of 84 IPOs. You know, that's 42 for a year. That's a fairly normal number. It reflects the numbers that we saw previous.
That's right.
So, I mean, you know, obviously 2021 and 2020 and 22 were outliers. And as you pointed out, there were reasons why this occurred. Now I want to flip it. Let's talk about how the plunge in SPACs took place and why we saw that dive.
You know, for all of us who had economics 101 and learned about supply and demand curves, I think there's not a better example than what you had. Coming back to the idea that the SPAC is an alternative to an IPO, and you have cycles of the IPO market. It goes up and it goes down for companies that want to raise capital. So what on average you have, call it 30 to 50 SPAC IPOs in a market where there are 2 to 500 regular way IPOs a year. That's the normal supply-demand balance for companies accessing the listed exchanges and investors interested in those companies. And let me just take a step back. The typical investor in a SPAC IPO, for those of the folks who are listening or not 100%, they may have picked up all their news from the front page of the business journals. The SPAC is required by regulation to invest the IPO proceeds in essentially government bonds of maturity less than 6 months. So it's a T-bill. It's a T-bill yield in the form of liquid publicly traded stocks. So with zero rates sitting around for a decade, you have hundreds of billions of dollars of credit funds out looking for ways to get yield. And the SPAC IPO is a great way for them to get liquid yield. They're investing in stocks for those portfolio managers who need to allocate to equities. They're getting a guaranteed yield because the proceeds of the IPO go into a fund invested in T-bills. And at the end of the SPAC search and it finds a merger target, it gives all its shareholders the opportunity to redeem. So for credit funds, credit arb funds, it's just a perfect vehicle to get liquid yield with safe downside protection. If they like the target company, they can keep the shares or they can sell the shares to other investors who want to own those shares. So you had, over the decade leading up to COVID, this buildup of demand for that product. At the same time, then you have the great successes of a few SPACs leading into that time, which drew attention from sponsors, people who wanted to run a SPAC and go out and buy a private company. And those two things came together. Huge demand from institutions, huge retail and sponsor awareness after, we'll just use DraftKings and Virgin Galactic as examples, but a series of successful SPACs. Huge supply, huge demand. Those supply and demand curves, as we say, shifted And so you had this, you know, tenfold expansion. The downfall, the contraction, is the combination of just coming back to normal supply demand, the right number of people who are capable of running SPACs, and the right amount of demand from institutions. So it's a return to normal. And I'll finish by saying, up until 2020, very few SPACs liquidated. That is, very few sponsors were unable to find a target. That means if you make an assumption that this is a supply of companies going public is fairly constant, that there was a good balance between sponsors looking for companies to take public and companies that want to go public finding SPAC sponsors. That was completely out of balance. Once you have 800 sponsors looking for the same, call it 50 good companies, 100 good companies to go public, half or more of the SPAC IPOs from that 2020-21 period have liquidated, which is the way it's supposed to work. There simply were not appropriate targets for them. So the product in many ways worked exactly the way it should. The sponsors did not find targets and they folded up shop. They lost a lot of money. I could go on, but really it's just a very classic supply demand. Too much supply of capital looking for too few IPO candidates, too much yield starved capital looking for a good yield offering product. And you have this sort of natural run up in the supply of SPACs that simply didn't have enough supply of target companies.
I think it's interesting to look at the target companies that went public during that time and pit them against the companies that were going public from 2019 and then kind of backward for a minute, because oftentimes what you saw were family-owned businesses where they were looking for the chance to go public and to get out of kind of a capital starvation in some cases. But these companies were throwing off money, mm-hmm. They were making money. They were what we think of as companies that had the ability to move forward, but perhaps they weren't moving forward as quickly as they wanted to. And so when we looked at the run-up, you saw, I think, to be fair, companies that were, in more than a few cases, not ready to go public. Going public is a big deal. It's a costly thing. It puts you underneath a microscope, and now you have different audiences. You obviously have shareholders rather than your front office making decisions in terms of, hey, what's good or what's bad or what we think will work. And again, I'm not trying to point fingers, but I think you had law firms that were more than happy to share in that business. I think you had investment banks who, rather than honestly looking at a sitting with a sponsor or for that matter, a target company and saying, I don't think you're ready for this. Mm-hmm. Here's some reasons why. Here's some issues we're concerned about. Or even the idea of, hey, look, you know, this is great, but let's slow down. We need you to take a harder look over here. And so they went public, but also you had a group of public investors, retail investors, who understood the idea that these companies were going off at 10 bucks a share. And that's pretty affordable. That's something I understand. It's a nice round figure. And in some cases, the companies were exciting. They had a story, and retail investors historically love stories. But also, it was a tough market in that, okay, here are all these retail investors who are willing to invest, but they don't necessarily understand the product, so much so that when a deal was put on the table and the shareholders needed to vote to say whether they approved of the deal or not, a lot of SPAC shareholders, a lot of SPAC sponsors began to realize these guys didn't understand the animal. They didn't understand that they needed to vote and approve that deal, which made the process longer, but also was a perfect illustration of why I think the SEC was in something of a dubious position. On the one hand, they're supposed to make it easier to raise funds and to go public, but they're also in charge of trying to protect investors. In this case, I think they were having to protect the investors from themselves, which is very difficult, I think, you know, in retrospect. So I think there were so many different reasons for the plunge as well. But let's shift gears for a second. Let's talk about what is the new normal? Because what I hear from people in SPAC land is, hey, you know, there's got to be a shakeup and a shakeout before we can get to a market where you look at it and say, this all makes sense. From where you sit, as you look at the market, tell me what the new normal looks like.
So you'll start off with the new normal and take the word new off. We're back to what is a normal market. If you start off with the statistics you and I were talking about in the beginning, you know, between 50 and 100 SPAC IPOs as a, you know, sort of 10 to 15% of the number of regular IPOs. Regular way IPO for a company that's got a following, that's got a very plain, straightforward story, will always be, or as we see it, will be the typical path to going public, a private company going public. But, you know, 10 to 20% of the companies that want to go public will be, you know, roughly the historic proportion of companies that go public use a SPAC. It's got characteristics. We could talk about why it is. It gives them certainty of getting public. So the new normal is the current market. We're on pace to do 25 to 50 SPAC IPOs this year, which I would point out is people whose memory only goes back to 2020 and 21 are the ones calling up and saying, oh, you know, the SPAC market is dead. It's over. This is the right level of activity for companies that want to take advantage of it. So when you say, what do I think about it going forward? I think this is the right market. You have also to consider something that you said just now, which is what are the right characteristics for a target company to use a SPAC to go public? That got lost in the rush of companies maybe getting bad advice, but also overly enthusiastic. A good SPAC target is exactly a good IPO candidate. It's got audited financial statements managed by a management team that's ready to go public, that understands the capital markets, that can articulate that story to shareholders. It's a company that has enough scale to have institutional appeal to the investors that drive the listed markets, the large enough to provide enough liquidity that big investors can get in and out. It's really those things. It's a critical mass of management expertise, public ready financial systems, and a story that's going to be appealing to the typical investor. So you've got now the right number of companies that have those characteristics. You have a core group of investment banks and law firms who understand the product and, frankly, can guide companies who aren't ready to other sources of capital. Though we spend a lot of time, companies come to us and say, I want to go public, find me a SPAC. We spend a lot of time matching them up with private sources of capital, which in many cases is an appropriate path for them. Maybe they do want to be public and they need a crossover route or something like that. So it's a combination of those four things. I'll repeat it. A public ready company with audited financials, a management team that has got experience in the capital markets, a story that's appealing to institutional investors, and a good set of advisors around them that understands the fundamental benefits of the SPAC versus other ways to go public. Those are the four things you need in a target to do it. And I think we have about the right balance between supply and demand now in the current level of activity.
Okay. Well, let's jump to the other side of the table for a minute. And this is something that Chardon certainly knows something about. Well, what does it take to be an effective sponsor during the run-up? Obviously, a number of SPAC IPOs were ridiculous. But what I heard over and over was, you know what? It's just not that hard to raise $250 million. And it can't be that hard to get the deal done. And in talking to a lot of sponsors and having some contacts, one of the things I hear from experienced sponsors over and over is the idea that raising the money is the easiest part of the proposition, that what really becomes the massive business is how do you find that right company?
Absolutely.
It's not that easy. I mean, you might have companies coming at you if you're lucky and you have to sift through. But the fact of the matter is finding, honest to God, quality company that you look at and say, not only is the company making sense, but this deal is going to trade well. It's a completely different animal.
Yeah, no, it's a very enthusiastic answer because it's why I love the product. Go back to the beginnings of Chardon back in the early 2000s and think about the group of people who run this company who continue to be there now. What are the characteristics that make a great sponsor? You have to understand the capital markets first and foremost, what a public offering is, what a public company needs, the tool set, right? The capital markets tool set. Plus, being in the flow of companies, a lot of exposure to deals of specifically companies that want to go public. And the third part is access to capital. You put up a lot of risk capital. The classic way that a SPAC works is the sponsor puts up many millions of dollars to pay lawyers and accountants and bankers, filing fees, printer fees. Millions of dollars are needed to raise hundreds of millions of dollars. It's not for the faint of heart. You could say, well, there's very wealthy, very accomplished people can just write those checks. But it's the combination of having just not that check to go public. As you said, the really hard part is putting a deal together and making sure that the target company is well-funded. So great sponsors can also anchor the IPO, which is essentially the merger, the SPAC merger at the end, not the SPAC IPO, but the launch of the public company. So again, four things: great capital market skills, exposure to deal flow. The third part of it, knowing how to execute a deal, how to hands-on run a deal, not rely on your lawyers and accountants and bankers to put a deal together for you, but really know how to negotiate a deal. And the fourth is capital, the ability to pick a deal up and anchor it and make sure that that target company is well launched. There's a limited supply of people who meet those characteristics. The guys that founded, and they were guys, founded Chardon back in the 2000s, were approached by colleagues of theirs because they had those and continue today to have those four qualities. We are in the middle of a tremendous deal flow of companies that want to go public. We have access to capital. We fundamentally understand how to do a deal. I'm just speaking of Chardon specifically because it's where I'm living now, but those are the qualities common to all the really good sponsors. And just coming back to why has there been such a contraction from the peak of the market? With all due respect, many of the sponsors who came in to the market were lacking in one or more of those areas. They may have had a lot of capital. They may have had great execution skills, but they might be coming, for example, out of multinational Fortune 50 companies and really not have a hands-on understanding of executing what essentially is an IPO and a merger. So those four characteristics are really critical and will continue to be critical going forward. Deal flow, capital market experience, hands-on execution skill, and access to capital. Those are the four things that make a sponsor really exceptional.
Let's shift gears for just a second and let's talk about our current deal environment, if you will. A day does not go by without us getting new news out of the White House about a number of different issues. What do you think we should expect given Trump economics, if you will, tariffs, government cuts? What should we expect in SPAC land given that environment?
I'm going to steer clear of any value judgment about politics or policy. And I'll limit this to really the topic here, which is where do SPACs as a tool fit into that whole landscape? And this is going to sound like an advertisement. I don't mean for it to. I'm going to be very objective as I can be. The current environment, for better or worse, is very unpredictable, chaotic or volatile, whatever word you want to use. The main reason that people choose the SPAC platform to go public is the certainty it provides. The IPO windows have been very, very narrow and the regular way IPO has been super challenging the last couple of years. Very little appetite for most offerings. For a target company that needs to go public and wants certainty about that, it's very hard to predict in the current policy environment what capital markets are going to look like, what valuations are going to look like. Uncertainty, I think, is probably the most neutral word I could use. For company owners, private equity funds, families, any control ownership of a company that wants it to go public, for whatever reason, they need the liquidity. Being public will serve the brand. It'll serve the company. But for a target company ownership that wants certainty, SPAC is really the only sure way to know that at the end of the day, you'll be public. And why do I say certain? The SPAC merger at the end of the process of the SPAC's life is a negotiated transaction. The owners of the company and the SPAC sponsor sit across. They negotiate the valuation. They negotiate the structure. And there's no outside influence other than what they bring with them. If interest rates suddenly rise and the value of the company falls, they can negotiate that. They don't have to go back out to investors and validate that. Also, a company may not actually need capital to go public. As I said before, the sponsor may have capital. The target company may have capital. They can come to an agreement on how much capital they want to raise in that SPAC go public transaction. So all the variables that go into closing an IPO window are not there at a SPAC merger. So I would say that given the uncertainty and unpredictability of the current capital markets, that SPACs are perhaps even more desirable now than they've ever been, because of the certainty they provide both the owner and the target company, owner of the SPAC and the target company. The only thing I'd say, Bill, and I want to emphatically say this, is everything we've talked about still applies. The company must be public ready. It has to stand up to scrutiny of regulatory and institutional due diligence. It's got to have a management team that's ready to be public. And all those things have to be disclosed in a very rigorous way. I'm not saying that this is easier, or lighter, or cheaper, or anything like that. It's still a very rigorous regulatory environment. Regardless of who's sitting at the top of the SEC, there's significant compliance that all parties have to pay attention to. But given that, it's still, I think, in the current sort of chaotic situation, probably the most certain path to a successful public offering.
We are just about out of time here. So I'd like to thank Guy for being with us and giving us his take on what it's like in SPAC land these days. I'd also like to thank my producer, Robert Sims, for his expertise and patience. For David Marcus and Drinks with a Deal, I'm Bill Maher. Until next time.